Oh, that was fun. That was so fun.
Well, this is To Buy or Boycott. I'm Allison.
And I'm Bridget. It's been almost exactly 1 year since we posted our last episode on AirPods, and listening back to it now is really surreal. Obviously, we were talking about things like commuting and listening to AirPods, or the importance of having random encounters with strangers, and these are just things that feel like very far away right now.
Life could not be more different than it was a year from now. What were you doing? Like, how were you spending your time a year ago?
So a year ago, I was running and training for races. Races are not happening right now. I was about to go to Cabo with my family. This is like an annual trip that we do. We were scheduled to do it this May. That is not happening this May. I was working on a different work project. So I was working on this mental health initiative actually with Stanford University, trying to focus actually on decreasing suicide and suicidal ideation on campus. That is no longer happening. I mean, nobody's on campus right now. So it's interesting. I mean, it fell through for reasons that aren't related to coronavirus, but it's just interesting to think back on the development of something that was so centered around how do you improve campus life when campus life isn't happening. I was thinking about how so the freshmen, you know, whether it's high school or college, the freshmen or the people that are graduating this year, so they graduate into a pandemic, but they were also freshmen when Trump was elected. So their whole 4 years of either high school or college was just this very weird time in history.
I mean, it kind of feels like everybody is embarking upon a new beginning of something unprecedented for them. So we are kind of collectively graduating from
life before Corona. What about for you? Like, I know a lot has changed in your life, but what do you want to talk about?
My gosh. So last year at this time, I was a teacher and I was going to go back to school this fall to be a teacher. And then unrelated to coronavirus, my whole life and reality shifted. And my mom, who's my only living parent, was in a very severe accident and had to relearn to walk and talk and needs a lot of care and assistance. And it was kind of touch and go the whole time. So things have been really uncertain. So living in a stew of uncertainty has been my norm. But now everybody is kind of in the pot with me, which is reassuring and heartbreaking. And, you know, I am a teacher, but I didn't think a year ago that I would be a teacher and quite the life teacher, the school of life versus Columbia University. But yeah. So coronavirus has been like an interesting thing that I think that I'm experiencing slightly removed, because while it has altered some of my realities, like I'm social distancing with my husband and my mom, like in her house in New Jersey, I was already cooking meals for everybody and taking care of house things. And now just like what felt like a very small responsibility now feels humongous. And I understand why homemaking was a profession at a point that people respected. But so my time, I don't know. What is time? What is?
So you snuck in another big thing that's happened in the last year when you said my husband.
So I'm in the face of everything. Actually, on the day that coronavirus was first announced publicly in China, December 30th. We eloped at City Hall, like just with our parents and his sister and her family. And it was amazing. And it felt like, okay, we're going to end a tough year on a great note. And then we went to New Orleans. It's like when you think back on things that weren't even that long ago that seem like Just, I cannot believe I was doing that. Just crazy how recent, but forever ago, time feels. And time was already feeling that way for me on a micro level, but now it's just like that in a macro level. I think my advice would be that we're just at the beginning. And when we look back on this moment, we won't, like, we'll look back on this time as being like, oh, you remember the beginning of coronavirus when we, like, had to stay home and we didn't know how to wear masks and socialize in public places?
I think you're right. Like, we are just at the very beginning of it. It feels like so much happens in each day. When, if you follow the news, you're like, oh my gosh, now this is happening. This is the numbers here. These are the new regulations. This hospital's overwhelmed. This one's not. There's a surge here. There's a surge there. And I think, I mean, I'm already feeling this way, but like I had to take a step back from following it at that like level of detail because it was too much.
We are ravenous news consumers. I mean, that it's been hard to figure out what to fill my time with because being a house, having the home be my occupation does leave me a lot of time to catch up on information, not necessarily like sit down and read a book, but like have short snippets of time. And I didn't want to get obsessed with Instagram. That also takes me back to an early BOB where I actually learned to appreciate Instagram more by having an account that only focused on things that I was interested in and kind of gave me a community. And I found myself commenting more. And I was like, oh, I love Instagram when I'm like an anonymous commenter in a community of people who are interested in the same niche things than I am. I was following a lot of wedding stuff because, you know, before this, like we eloped, but we did want to have a big wedding. And then kind of thinking about the way that, you know, not only are the things that we're doing different, but the way that I'm spending money, the way that I'm kind of like the hierarchy of needs are just changing. Once you feed people, you give them some booze, you put a tent up, you go to DJ and a photographer, it's very expensive. So that all seems like crazy. And the fact that we had this like perfect elopement, which like, I wish I could have shared it with more people. The way that I'm thinking about kind of like money and what's important feels so different from like.
Yeah. So like, let's get into that. Like how are you spending your time?
Well, I'll start at the kind of most superficial and say like, I loved restaurants. So I had a lot of Google Maps of like, I'd read about restaurants or I'd see restaurants online and like, I'd save them to a Google map in like different cities. So I had like these like growing. So that's like the intersection of like both eating out and travel, which it's just like, I don't care. You know, like I'm no longer like really like fantasizing about going places because that feels, I feel like I will travel again, but that's not the one thing that I'm like, oh, if I never get that back. We were oversaturated with travel. There was like already this kind of like reckoning with like, what is all this travel doing? But man, I loved restaurants. I really, really loved restaurants. I love to cook. And not that I haven't cooked more in the last 3 months than I've cooked in the last 30 plus years. And I cooked dinner pretty much every night, but not three meals a day for three people every day. And we do that sometimes, but it's still like nonstop. But I just like, you would read about restaurants. The discovery of it was so active and like, I just devote zero time to that now. I'm reading a ton. Oh my gosh. I have like, I'm just like flying through books. I'm meditating. I like not to be like one of those people. I am a Karen. I'm meditating. I'm making sourdough bread. I'm like doing all the things. I regrew some celery leaves in a little pot next to my window. I have a victory garden. I'm doing all of the Instagram things.
A friend came by and dropped off a sourdough starter, so now I need to like learn how to feed the thing or take care of it. There's like a process, right?
Feed the bitch. Oh my gosh. Read No Reservations. Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, is kind of what got me excited. I was shunning the sourdough starter craze until I read No Reservations. And then I like shouting, feed the bitch. And it got me into...
I've heard that's a good audiobook, so I think, and I kind of want like him, and I think he reads it, so I kind of feel like hearing his voice again would actually be amazing. So maybe I'm going to download that as an audiobook.
I would listen to it again.
Yeah.
Like in addition to having read it, it was so well done. It was really funny. It was amazing. I'm doing a lot of gardening, which I used to have like little flower pots in my New York City apartment. But since we're at my mom's house, she had this big garden and she was in an accident and has like has a really severe brain injury. So she's not able to like do a lot of the gardening, much less like really remember what a lot of the things even are. So like I'm having to figure out like, is this a weed or is this a flower? Like, is this supposed to be here? Weed is just a flower where you don't want it. It's like a plant where it's not supposed to be. It's not wrong inherently. It's like growing, it's alive. It like could even flower and be beautiful, but it could like be depleting nutrients from the soil that like, you know, the other flowers that are there on purpose, you know. There are so many reasons and there are so many like intricate things, and I've learned not much about being a master gardener, but the fact that there is such a thing called a master gardener was not something I knew before all this happened. I'm on some newsletter. I now gardening newsletters, which takes up probably some of my time.
I mean, I think like, so the things that for me that have shifted a little bit is just like my relationship to running is very different. I've been much better about kind of listening to my body because it feels like there's no deadline for any of these goals. So whereas with a race, it's like, I've got to be fit and I've got to put in the time because by this date, like I'm going to have a test, a race. And now it feels like, well, I can make that race whenever I want. And so I think maybe in some ways it's a little bit of a healthier relationship to it because I feel like I can, if I don't feel like running one day, it's okay to drop my mileage a little bit or push a workout or whatever. So that's been kind of interesting. For me, work-wise, I feel like work has actually never been busier. It was, I think, being a marketing consultant, not that I have the playbook on what to do in a pandemic. Nobody has that playbook, but I do feel like maybe there's a shift in companies letting maybe full-time marketers go or cutting back on their marketing teams, but then looking and being very willing to pay for expert advice. That's a good thing. And then, you know, along with all of that, obviously comes the guilt of being a privileged person who can and who can work from home and who has opportunities right now when it feels like there's just a lot of doors that are being closed for unfair reasons.
I do see a lot of innovation happening in a lot of interesting pockets. A lot of people who aren't essential and, you know, essential businesses in some areas actually are giving a lot of opportunity to people. I see a lot of great innovation from restaurants that I like that are turning into provision stores and selling things that kind of enhance my cooking experience. And then there will be like new markets and opportunities based on those things. It's like, oh, like your grandma makes the most delicious sauce. It's like, well, it's like that your grandma makes the most delicious sauce. Like there's actually an economy for people who just need sauce again. I want to get it on like a more local level. Like I'm not buying anything on Amazon. Like that is something that I am dedicating my not looking at restaurant time to. I will go out of my way to like buy something. And even if it's not local, it's like if I can like buy to pick up something from Michael's. Like I wanted a tie-dye kit. If I could buy to pick up something from Michael's, I'd rather do that. So at least like that store, like the people who work in that store. Yeah. But
it's tough. It's so tough. Like I go back and forth between, I mean, so I still use Amazon, you know? Yeah. I don't know. I struggle with it. Am I supporting the people who are doing these jobs, but are, if I stop supporting them, then would it create more opportunity or would it put pressure on Amazon to be a little bit better?
I guess I'm not black and white on it, but generally like things like flour, canned beans, like things that I would just like not even think twice of to just like put in a single order on Amazon and like expect it in 2 days. Now it's just like, oh, well, like I'll spend 2 days and I'll find like the organic mill in Illinois that makes the flour that I want and I'll wait for it and I'll pay $10 in shipping because that feels fair. Like that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something that you said about the when we were talking about restaurants, like I think there is something kind of maybe that feels even more like the American dream is possible. So, you know, I was reading the article. I don't know if you saw the New York, I think it was in New York Magazine or New York Times about Prune.
The New York Times.
And
oh,
then
yes.
I was reading David Chang also wrote a really good piece about just like the future of restaurants. And he's someone who I didn't know this, but years ago actually tried to do a takeout only restaurant, kind of a higher end.
Oh, I loved it. Maple, RIP Maple. I was like one of their biggest customers. I loved it so much. Sorry. You just brought up something that really touched my heart. I loved that concept.
Reading about it, you know, when he said like maybe it was ahead of its time. Maybe this is something that comes back. But, you know, one thing that stood out in both of those articles was that both of those chefs talk about how many people come here as immigrants and start restaurants and that is in many ways the foundation of the American dream. And when I think about it that way, you know, I get so worried about the, you know, single proprietor restaurants maybe not being able to survive or not being something that can happen in the future. But as you were talking about your friends saying like maybe they won't, but maybe there'll be these community kind of groups that exist and you can insert yourself into it, like maybe that actually is even more supported than the system that we have now. You immigrate from a place and maybe if you don't know anyone, like there's still going to be a group that then you can kind of go to and say like I would have started a restaurant, or I know how to make the best rice, I know how to make the best sauce, I know how to make the best hummus. And they, you know, what ideally, you know, this is my optimistic rose colored glasses world, but like maybe then you have, it feels less like it's you have to figure out how to do a restaurant and everything about it, and that's how you're going to survive, and more about like I find the group that is already doing this, they have 3 restaurants and now I make hummus for one of them. And like,
well, that's the hot bread kitchen, kind of the world central kitchen model. Hot bread kitchen is this like bakery initiative in New York City that like hires immigrant women to make their native breads. Cool. And like baked goods. And then they sell them at farmers markets. And then like if they're popular, they like teach lots of people how to make them. And now, you know, it's like a whole network of. And then they have kitchen space that they rent out to women and immigrant food companies. And then World Central Kitchen is like trying to find ways to put restaurants like in the pipeline of feeding people who are hungry. So it's not just using restaurants, which if you build a community, like not a neighborhood restaurant, which was like, okay, like people who live in like these 2 blocks, like come to this restaurant because it's just like convenient for them and it's an extension of them, versus like this community. So be that a ethnic community, a arts community, a, you know, whatever kind of community that may be, know that you could support it by buying the bread at the market. Or you can support it by making a donation so that somebody else like that you know that you support. Although as soon as I'm kind of just riffing and talking about this idea, I'm like, eek, we are like really moving into a political polarization where it's like, I protect mine. And like, you know, coronavirus has just really flared up this like me versus them. And where I live in New, or like where I'm riding this out in New Jersey, it's clear that the mask is a political statement. Yeah. It's so, there are so many like don't tread on me flags being woven, like waving, and Trump flags and the thin blue line, like Blue Lives Matter pro, that's all kind of shadowy racist flag. And it's like, But then there are a lot of people also wearing masks, and like a lot of kids that are out with their friends, and like half of them are wearing masks and half of them aren't wearing masks. And you can tell it's like some people's parents are like, your friend's parents are a piece of shit. You have to wear a mask. But it's just like becoming, we're very like protective of our own. It's all scary.
That's interesting that you're having that experience, because in Silicon Valley, you know, I live in right next to Stanford University. So we are very, very solidly blue. I mean, I know Trump actually did have a rally with some asshole tech mega millionaire up here, but for the most part, we are solidly blue. And so it feels like everybody is wearing a mask. Everybody knows what Fauci said at the last press briefing. We're all voting for Biden. So in that way, it feels my bubble is very unified. Like everybody knows the rules to stand in line at Trader Joe's. Nobody is violating any of the guidelines. And if there's a place that is kind of, I think we've kind of also taken pride maybe in responding really early. I live in one of the counties that was the first one to put shelter in place in effect. And we never had a surge, you know, and look, there's many reasons why that's probably the case, and not all, we can't kind of pat ourselves on the back, really, or we shouldn't really be patting ourselves on the back. We probably got lucky, but.
You know, a lot of people that already work from home and a lot of like factors that are in place totally. That.
We don't have
cars. You guys in California have cars. We don't have cars. It's different. Well, I was on the subway until March 16th. Every day. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so exactly. Like there were lots of factors that were probably going to spare us anyways, but it does feel like we do feel like we're leading the way, and we want to kind of continue to be like, we did it right from the very beginning. We're going to wear the masks. We're going to cancel everything until 2021. Look at us. But it makes me feel safe, you know, because it's like there's a unit. I know what the rules are. Everybody is abiding by them. We're all in lockstep. And there's comfort in that.
The beach is open. The bathrooms will be open Memorial Day weekend. The boardwalk, they tried to close the boardwalk. So many people still drove to the beach that everyone was walking in the streets that it was so dangerous that they had to open the boardwalk to give people a place to walk. It is. Everybody thinks they're the only person who had the idea to drive to the beach that day. I've only listened to one podcast in this time, though. Are you listening to podcasts?
Oh, that's so interesting. Yes, I still am obsessed with podcasts. One thing that we talked about in the AirPod episode was how much I require or like am addicted to kind of just like stimulus, constantly having other people telling me stories, telling me news. And that is still a real thing. I listen to fewer news podcasts than I did before Corona. I like stories way more. I want to hear stories about how people are getting through this moment, but also that things that spark me to think about like, what can I do to help people? What are the actions I can take? I think the news podcasts just leave me feeling like, okay, this is awful. This is awful in this new way. This thing that was hopeful is now not hopeful. But you're kind of left with just like, so what? And so I think the thing that I want is like, how do I give back? What can I do? What are people doing? Where are people really needing help? And how can I insert myself into that? And I think podcasts for me are doing a good job of kind of steering me and making me think about that.
I think that I'm getting those anecdotes by reconnecting with particularly one charity that I'm on a junior board for, which is called Citizens Committee for New York City. We kind of had become known as a community garden group because like those types of civic projects that have no paid staff and we're really like of and by the community is what we specialize in. And they have just mobilized during coronavirus because they're like, we know the leaders in the community. So it's not like a great initiative by one person. It's, you know, the innovation and community and collaboration of like a group of people who are finding ways, but that does take money and that's philanthropy.
For this, I was very, you know, I worked for a while for a company that was doing funding surgeries in, you know, East Africa and the developing world. I feel like I kind of spent a lot of my, not a lot of my charity dollars, but I certainly would say that at least 50% of the focus of where I was putting my my money and my donations was more global than it was national. And now I feel like I am hyper, like my money and my time is going to spend like just to my community. And I don't know if that's like a, you know, part of me is like that it feels right. But I do wonder, like, long term, you know, this crisis is happening everywhere. This is a global crisis, but it does feel like, at least for me, the response in my responsibility is very much like centered around my community, but maybe that's not right. I don't know. You know, obviously, I mean, actually, my community, when I think about it, is struggling far less than other communities, even in my state, certainly it's struggling less than other communities in the United States and in the world. So like, is that wrong of me to be supporting and really focusing kind of the dollars that otherwise would be going to philanthropy on supporting my community? Or is that okay? I don't know.
There are hungry people everywhere. So that is like the scary, but also like even in my backyard kind of reality of this crisis is that like there are hungry people everywhere. But I am kind of the opposite. My typical giving strategy is very like local. Like I'm very New York City education, New York City like civic engagement. But I am so worried based on like how little we're taking this seriously as our nation for the people who are genuinely scared and don't know any better. I don't know. It makes me want to look at like a great public health NGO. But I mean, that's the importance of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and then people here demonize them and the work that they're doing when like they are actually literally out there like, hey, Sub-Saharan Africa, let's get ready for this. Let's do this together. And that's like, that's somebody has to do that. And we can't trust the government to do that. It's like scary that we even have to talk about philanthropy in the context of this conversation, because the government response has been so patchy, so haphazard, and just leaves you feeling so insecure.
Yeah. Yeah. The government's response has been like, we're going to help the people who we care about the most, who donate to us. And we're going to help the people who have the resources to get to the front of the line, and good luck to everybody else. I mean, not to get too political, but like, I guess one thing as you were talking that I realized, you know, that I've also done in addition to kind of thinking about philanthropy and spending money in my community is I'm definitely spending, and I would have probably done this in any other election cycle, but like my political spending is way up. And I think part of it is because like I'm taking comfort in that the Biden will win and that will hopefully take back the Senate. And that I can then place a little bit more trust in not only our government's ability to respond to this moment, but also then in having an administration that understands the world and that is a better diplomat and that has a functioning State Department that thinks about these things, that has smart people in place. If I can help to get the better people in place, then that feels really important and like maybe the most urgent thing that I can do right now.
Well said. That's thinking fast and slow. I mean, I am like so like, ha, 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 wah, wah, bread. Trump's gonna win. We're fucked. I'm projecting into the future. I'm like not pausing. I'm not taking a second. Because, you know, to make up for the gap of innovators, creatives, folksy, craftsy people, there's gonna need to be a jobs program. There was already clearly a need for a federal employment program that helped push us towards like new energy resources. And I'm hoping that a federal jobs program is in part just like a retooling of what it really means to hold some of these essential jobs. Like to your point, that sounds very constructive. Yeah. And I'm going to try to implement that thinking into keeping me calm in the face of just feeling helpless sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy. We've all been there, you know, that feeling of helplessness. Okay. So I think we've got to sum this up. In my mind, it's, are we buying or boycotting the people that we have become in this moment? So the habits, the things that you're now focusing on, are those things that when we are in a post-COVID coronavirus life. Are you holding on to them? Are you buying them? Are you boycotting them?
Well, just to be cheeky, I'm going to boycott some of the quarantine trends. Like sourdough bread is a waste of time and instant yeast is absolutely acceptable. And supporting your local bakery is wonderful. Tie-dye, I don't think is going to like ride with us for the next 10 to 15 years. But some things that I found about myself as a person, just from having the time, I make a list of all of the food that I'm going to cook for the next 3 to 5 days on a sheet of paper. And even if I don't follow it, it's like good to know that I have a plan. And the weeding and kind of like all of these things that I've adopted because they just had to get done. And it kind of like we were thrown into the situation and they just had to get done are things that I feel like I've learned from and I've grown from and I better understand being an adult. It's funny that our generation was so focused on adulting. And it's almost like your question to me, like made more trivial, is are we buyer boycotting adulting? Because this quarantine is adulting in a nutshell. It's like hard and it's tough and you got to power through and you got to just figure it out. And it's going to be different for everybody and it's going to come in waves. But I'm a strong buy on adulting. I like being an adult. It's hard, but it's gratifying.
Yeah, I love that. I think I'm the same. I'm a total buy on this. I mean, obviously I say this from a place of privilege and I'm trying to recognize that. But maybe one of the things that I'm buying in this moment is that it's giving me time to reflect on my own privilege. This moment has given me time to reflect on my relationships. You know, Adam and I now have kind of a happy hour routine, and that's born out of the fact that he works from home now. And so we can carve out moments together. But then those moments are things that I would hope after this moment is over, and maybe when he goes back to working in an office, that we still do. You know, we still kind of sit on our front, we have a little front yard and we wave to people as they walk by. And I hope that more people like enjoy walking and running. You know, as a runner, I see more people than ever riding their bikes and running. And I know not all of them will continue when gyms open back up and you can go do your bar or your Pilates class, but I hope that some of them do. And, you know, I kind of welcome more people to that community. You know, as someone who worked from home, I think when this started, I was like, oh, I don't need to change my routine. I have a great routine. But after the first week or two, I really realized that I did need to change my routine. And that routine is now something that I will continue. I wake up at the same time every morning, which is an hour before I like need to be at, like logged into work so that I can write. And I've like figured out a way to write every morning that I like. I hated journaling, but I would try to make myself journal. And like now I have this other way of writing that I actually enjoy that isn't journaling or morning pages. And I'll continue to do that. Like that's a great thing for me. So yeah, I'm a strong buy on the person that I'm becoming. I think the adulting part, you nailed it. Like it is a moment that we are all forced to adult, to level up. So tune in for follow-up conversations. We're going to be doing a buyer boycott on life in quarantine. So feel free to find us on social media. You can email us at tobuyerboycott@gmail.com. If you want to join the conversation or have a suggestion, you can find us on Twitter @tobuyerboycott. And for now, bye.
Or boycott.